It's one of those things that everybody probably should have and certainly should consider, but nobody really talks about. Life insurance. Setting aside some of your money today so that hopefully, many, many years from now, hopefully, when you pass on, your family's financial future is secure. But what plan should you get? Who qualifies for what policies? How much does it cost? How much does it pay out? These are just some of the questions we hope to answer in this hour of the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Craig Cohen, joined in the studio today by John W. Wright and John W. Wright II from John Wright & Associates, a life insurance agency based here in Champaign-Urbana. Any questions you have about life insurance, why you might need it, how much, what kind, what plans would work best for you, we'll try to help. Our phone number is 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. And we want to take as many calls as we can, so do not linger. We'd hate to run out of time before getting to your call. Call 333-WILL, 1-800-222-WILL. John W. Wright is a chartered life underwriter and a lifetime member of the Million Dollar Roundtable, as well as a member of the General Agents and Managers Association, or GAMA. While attending the University of Illinois in the mid-60s, he was a top scholar athlete, making the Dean's List for 4 years while setting records on the football field for the Fighting Illini. He graduated from the U of I in 1968, was drafted by the NFL Atlanta Falcons, played with them for 1 year, then spent 2 years with the Detroit Lions. Following his football career, he joined Northwestern Mutual Life as a general agent. He'll soon enter his 30th year in the insurance business. John W. Wright II is also a chartered life underwriter as well as a chartered financial consultant, a solid scholar athlete in his own right. He captained the 92 Illini football team, graduated from the university in 93 and joined his father's agency. In addition to insurance sales, he's also an investment specialist with Northwestern Mutual and Robert Baird Securities. So any questions you might have on insurance-related investments, such as variable annuities or variable life insurance, he might be able to answer those as well. Gentlemen, welcome to the Afternoon Magazine.
Thanks, Craig.
Thank you.
First of all, let's just start right at the beginning. Who do you think needs life insurance? Either one of you can take that question.
Well, who needs life insurance? I guess my answer to that would be someone that wants to take care of someone else. Life insurance is a very unselfish product. Now, it's used in many, many ways today, so there are a lot of situations where that product can be used in businesses or for certain types of investments or collateral, et cetera, that can have more of a greedy or a greed-based, which is fine. I'm not saying that in a negative connotation.
Right.
But I think overall, someone that wants to take care of, show some responsibility to a loved one, et cetera.
What are some of the different kinds of policies that are available?
I'll take that one. This, okay. Maybe for convenience, this is Johnny, the younger John. And let me comment, too, on that first question. When you talk about who needs life insurance, one of the paradigms that certainly we try to communicate to our clients when we go through a fact-finding interview, which means getting to know the client, because before you can decide how much life insurance you need, or I think even a better word is how much life insurance you want, you need to find out what the family's or client's or business goals and objectives are. And I oftentimes say to people when they come into office and one of their first questions is, well, how much life insurance do I need? I said, you know what? I don't know that you need any. I think a better question is, how much life insurance do you want? You know, when you walk in your door and the three brown eyes meet you, what do you want to do for that family, or what do you want to do for that business partner, is better than the needs-based. I mean, there are so many things that we really don't need, but we want them. And we try to use financial formulas, pretty basic financial formulas, to ascertain the right amount of insurance for that client. Now, your follow-up question, Craig, in terms of what types of life insurance are there? There are a number of different types, and for those of you who've been in life insurance discussions, you know you've heard life insurance called all different kinds of things. But for the most part, there are two basic types of life insurance. There, first of all, is term insurance. Term insurance is like anything you've ever rented. It just insures the risk for a certain period of time. There's no equity. It's pure life insurance. And then there's permanent insurance, which has a variety of names from whole life to variable universal life, which combines life insurance benefit with an accumulation feature. And those vary across the board. So those are the two basic types of life insurance. Term, which is more like rent, and permanent, which I use, it's more like buying a home or owning an asset.
In what situations do you prefer to use term versus whole life?
Well, I think that's the great question, because there's really two basic philosophies on life insurance. The first thing to do with life insurance, if there is a goal to make sure that someone's protected, someone that you care about or something that you care about, is to have the right amount. So that's the first thing you need to do with life insurance. If you decide that, let's say we're a family of four, we have a spouse and two children, and we decide that at one of the deaths we want to cover all of our debts, we want to provide for our children's education, and we want to provide a supplemental income for our spouse for a certain period of time. We need to determine how much money will it take to do those things. And it's pretty easy with financial calculators to figure out. We use conservative assumptions to figure out how much that will take. So that's the first goal, determine the amount of coverage you want to own. Then you determine what is the right way to own the coverage. As any of the listeners know, term insurance is very, very reasonable at young ages. And oftentimes when our clients have already maxed out some of their other savings vehicles, term insurance might make sense, meaning they haven't even filled the gap on their IRAs or their 401ks, so they own term insurance. However, when our clients get to a point where they're utilizing their 401k or 403b from the University of Illinois standpoint, when they're utilizing a Roth IRA or when they're phased out of a Roth IRA, they start looking around at non-qualified plans, and all that is a fancy name for after-tax plans, and oftentimes the right design life insurance can become a terrific, not only benefit for the family at death, but a very, very sophisticated accumulation vehicle for retirement, for children's education, and for emergencies. So that's a long answer to your question, but it's not an easy task. And that's why most likely life insurance will continue to be a product that is counselor sold. I think it's very unlikely that life insurance, especially permanent life insurance, becomes a commodity, because it really does take a lot to understand it, understand all that goes into it.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, which is that we're starting to see examples of life insurance as an option to be bought and sold on the internet. What do you think? Honestly, it just, you can't get past, you have to have an agent?
I would say, I'll give you two answers to that. I would say to just buy temporary term insurance. I think there could be a market for that on the internet. I don't think it's the way to do it. I mean, obviously, my business is counseling clients,
right,
on insurance. But I have not seen any drop-off in business in my practice, nor in our entire agency, because of the ability to have it on the internet. And the reason, besides it just being a sophisticated financial product, is the reason we were talking about beforehand, Craig, is the fact that most people don't have or don't want to think about their own mortality. And to get online to go shop stocks or to go buy products that you want to think about is one thing. To go to a page on the web that is going to talk about your own mortality and what do you want to have done for your family and your loved ones at your own mortality is a difficult discussion and one that often takes a lot of thought. I don't see a lot of insurance summits happening in the living rooms of our families on their own. It usually takes someone like myself to ask them some of the tough questions that need to be asked, and then we move forward. So, but the time will tell on that.
I want to echo that, Craig. I've been in this business 30 years. I've been around the psychology world of motivating people for a long, long time. And there's some very hard statistics. Matter of fact, these are statistics from Columbia University that four quick statistics. Less than 10% of all books are purchased or read past the first chapter. 100 people join a health club. 7% never go. 25% are gone in the first month. 75% are gone after 3 months. Less than 50% of heart attack victims follow through with their doctor's prescribed recommendations of lifestyle changes. And 40% of smoke alarms have no batteries or have defective batteries. And those statistics are rather amazing, but I'm sure our listeners would kind of shake their heads, wow, you know, I've done some of that stuff. And it's because human beings are hardwired. We're pretty much hardwired not to follow through. And as what Johnny just said, the fact that We're asking people to make tough decisions, to have deferred gratification. We live in a society for immediate gratification. And it's just like physical fitness, the personal trainer. It helps the person become physically fit. I mean, we're really in the financial fitness business. And once we get by product, strictly a term buyer that's interested in the term product, not a sophisticated in-depth planning session, I do not see the internet being a factor there.
We're talking with John and Johnny Wright, life insurance agents, and we welcome your questions and comments on life insurance at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 1-800-222-WILL. John, I know that you sell policies for Northwestern Mutual Life, and they don't have a universal life plan, but maybe if you could talk a little bit about what that is and what your reaction is to that.
I'm going to defer that to Johnny. He could probably do a better job of that.
Be happy to answer that. And universal life insurance is a hybrid product. It's a permanent product. And let me describe universal life this way. Universal life insurance is term insurance. It has a term mortality cost that goes up with a side fund. And the side fund in traditional universal life insurance gets about a treasury bill or a long-term bond rate of return. A variable universal life insurance policy is going to have separate accounts like mutual funds, and it can obviously reflect the market. And let me describe some of the problems that have happened with universal life insurance and one of the reasons why Northwestern Mutual has stayed away from universal life insurance, and not to say that it's not a good product, but universal life insurance unbundles the product, and it places the mortality risk on the policyholder. What universal life got in trouble is in the early 80s when universal life insurance came out, if you remember interest rates, we had as high interest rates we've had in our history, 18, 19, 20% interest, and the projections on these universal life plans. And you need to any people listening need to realize any life insurance proposal illustration that they look at is a projection. It has a lot of factors into it: mortality cost, expenses, and then investments. So, with that came numbers as interest rates began to climb down and mortality cost in some cases went up that didn't support themselves. And universal life insurance, if the investment component doesn't fulfill the projection at the guarantees, there's a possibility of the policy lapsing, which meaning no more coverage. So that's the reason Northwestern Mutual stayed away from universal life. But universal life insurance can be a fine product. The important thing to realize is make sure you always run interest rates lower than what's being illustrated. 100 basis points, 200 basis points lower. Ask them to show you the maximum amount of expenses that can be taken from the contract. And oftentimes it's good to overfund a universal life insurance contract so you have some money to hedge and grow and accumulate at a more conservative rate.
I want to talk about illustrations in a bit and some of the factors that go into them. Go ahead,
John. Let me add to that. When we made this decision, and I happened to be on the executive committee when that decision was made back in the late 70s, early 80s, not to have a universal life product, that was a tough decision. I mean, it was the hot thing to do. It was a very, very marketable product in the industry. But I take my hat off to the Northwestern Mutual leadership because they really felt that it was not in the best interests of the policy owners, and that is our mission statement to be of value to the policy owners. And that decision stood the test of time because about 10 years later, many, many of the universal life policies were in serious trouble, and the industry kind of shifted. They actually changed the universal life policies to make them a safer product. But that was a tough decision at that time.
Basically, if the agent knows what they're doing and is working with you through it and is running the right illustrations, those can work, though.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Those can be fine products. I mean, there are some of the most reputable companies in the industry have very, very fine universal life insurance products. It's just important to understand what you own and what can happen. And in the later years of universal life insurance, when the mortality costs are very high and oftentimes when people start using their cash value in the forms of loans for supplemental retirement, supplemental education, it's just very important to make sure that the policy can support itself. I mean, you don't want a policy to lapse. There are several things that can happen in any life insurance contract that it's important to look at different scenarios with different numbers.
Let's take a phone call. We have a caller on line number 4 from Peoria. Hi, welcome to the Afternoon Magazine.
Yes, good afternoon. I have insurance with a company. Just got a packet today on whether we want to vote on to convert this company to a stock company. Are you familiar with this?
Well, let me answer that. This is Johnny Wright. I know a lot of you're voting whether the life insurance company is going to become a stock company. You have
it's
a proxy.
To vote
on that.
It's up to the people that have insurance now. We are supposed to vote on whether we want to have it convert or remain the same.
I'll tell you, that is a let me just say this. That's a very technical question, and I'm not sure that I could articulate that without getting a lot of facts about the company, the histories. Is it a mutual company now? What type of company it is?
It's a mutual company right now. You want me to give you the name of the company?
That'd be fine.
John Hancock.
Okay. John Hancock has now sent you a proxy to see whether or not they're going to become a stock company.
Whether we vote for them to become a stock company or not.
Well, certainly that could be good for potential stockholders of the company. Whether that's the best thing for the policyholders of the company, I guess you as the policyholders are going to decide that. Not working directly with John Hancock, certainly I've competed against them, but it would be hard for me to comment with any degree of intelligence on that or suitability or compliance. But Bobby, do you want to echo anything?
I think we have seen in the last few years a movement of the mutual companies becoming stock companies. Now, they're doing that for one reason, for capitalization, or one major reason. And I can just tell you this. The Northwestern Mutual has no plans right now to move to a stock company. And that may because they just do not feel that is in the best interest of the policy owners of the Northwestern Mutual. They have made some – you may have read some press about – they may become a there may become a holding company that would deal with the tax ramifications of stock companies have certain tax advantages that mutual companies do not have, and so you have to make sure that you're in a competitive position in the tax arena. But that's just kind of for your information. The Northwestern does not want to do that. They feel it's in the best interest of the policy owners to be mutual. So, of course, again, as Johnny said, you need I'm sure Hancock has laid out a lot of good information for you to look and so that you can make an intelligent decision.
Well, I haven't read it yet, but my dividend for this year is $2,402, and the dividends, accumulated dividends, are $1,615.57. Now, I've carried this insurance since 1931.
Good for you.
And I also have my GI insurance that I had when I went in the Army and got out 5 years later during World War II. Now, that's the best insurance I've ever had. Right now, it will pay my heirs over $15,000.
And to go ahead and vote in favor of this, considering that he's got another policy, would that make any difference in the decision-making process?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, there's no connection with the John Hancock and the GI. I understand that the GI actually, there are 10 different companies that participated in covering the soldiers during World War II.
Well, let me give you my suggestion. I would not try to plow through that legal document that's in front of you. I've seen those proxies before, and it's not easy reading for even an attorney. I would recommend if you have a John Hancock agent or representative, either calling them or talking to them, setting up a meeting with them, and let them walk this through with in layman's terms. What does this mean? What does this mean for you? What does this mean for the policyholders of the company? You know, that's what they're there for. If my companies that I represent, and primarily that's Northwestern Mutual, we would, you know, tell our policy owners which way we're voting as a policyholder of the company, and share that and why we're doing that. Does that make sense?
Sure does. I have an address of the local agent here, so I'll appreciate that you told me to call him.
Yeah, I'd give him a call.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks for the call. And you can join us by calling 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. We're talking with John and Johnny Wright, life insurance agents, about life insurance. We talked a little about whole life. Maybe we could talk some more about term insurance. And one of the things that's in the news right now is this Triple X legislation. Maybe you could explain what that is and what it's going to mean for the insurance industry.
That's a very pertinent topic, and actually it affects both not only term insurance but also affects universal life insurance. And it all has to do, you know, as you know, the listeners, life insurance is a state-regulated product. And one of the things that has been a vogue product are these 20-year level and 30-year level term products. And for those of you who are listening that are, you know, under 40, you're probably amazed by the amount of coverage you can lock in for 30 years. For example, you know, a $500,000 level term product, you know, might cost you $400 to $500 to lock it in for 30 years. And what is happening is the state commissioners are saying that those products really don't have enough reserves to support the guarantees in the contract. It doesn't mean they can't pay the claims. I don't want anybody fearing that the claims can't be paid, but the reserves, meaning the company monies that are set aside for a mortality, and not just for mortality, but for a potential mortality influx, are not high enough, and they want those reserves to be higher. Hence, you're going to see less guarantees on level 20 and level 30 products. Meaning you
and
might
that means 20 years or 30-year term.
Right, 20 years, meaning the premium would be fixed for those 30-year period. And what you may see after the first year after this bill becomes an issue, becomes law, is you may see two columns now representing your premium. You may see a non-guaranteed premium that stays the same, but you also may see a guaranteed premium that maybe after the first 5 or 7 or 10 years is much higher than the guaranteed premium that the company, if they wanted to or if they had to, and again, this would be have to be approved by the state, that they could go in and charge more premium if they had to pay claims. So realize the state commissioners and the insurance industry are putting this in place for the safety of the policy owners. And interestingly enough, to use a Northwestern Mutual example, and that's one of the reasons why we work with Northwestern so often and represent them, is their term insurance has always had this guarantee. You know, their annual renewable term insurance, their level term insurance has always had this reserve guarantee for the policy owner. And quite frankly, Northwestern has given up some business because of that. We have clients that say, you know what, I want the guarantee. And as advisors, we say, you know, it's better to have it this way, but, you know, to have a contractual written guarantee with another company, sometimes Northwestern has given up some term insurance business on that. But now it's going to create a more level playing field in the term arena and is going to change the guarantee. So we've seen a real fire sale in the term insurance industry these last 6 months, people trying to lock in before this legislation becomes approved.
John? I think it's important to remember that companies, term insurance is a very profitable product for companies because they've got about a 2% mortality history on term. So in other words, you're buying term insurance, you got a 98% chance that you will never collect on that term insurance. You got a 2% chance that you will collect on it. So I think the regulators are saying companies are not going to be able to gamble on that. They're going to have to back it up. And we use this, it sounds kind of like a flippant statement, but it's very accurate. I mean, the best kind of insurance to own is that which is in force when you die. And the best time to buy that insurance is the day before you die. Now, Craig, if you can come into our office and give us those two times, then we can really do some phenomenal, accurate planning for you.
Hopefully I'll be dropping by, about 50, 60 years from now.
That's right. But since we don't know that, then we have to do some other types of planning.
And if you would like to get in on this conversation, again, our phone number is 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. I want to touch on one other thing with the Triple X legislation. Is it possible then that some insurance companies could set their rates and guarantee a certain low rate for 10 years, as you suggested, but then not say at all what the rates will be from that point forward? And then if they just have to rise, if they just have to bring up the cost of the premium, then that's just what they'll do without informing policyholders. Is that a concern at all?
Well, I don't think you mentioned 10-year. I don't think the 10-year products, the 10-year level guaranteed products, are going to be as affected as much as these 20 and 30-year products.
Well, I'm thinking about a 20 or 30-year product where they say for the first 5 or 10 years of it,
oh, okay,
we'll have a certain premium, a certain guarantee, and then from that point forward, because the statement they could make is, well, historically these premiums have gone down as the years have gone on, and so you don't have to worry about it.
Well, one of the things the legislation I know will enforce on the, you know, the numeric summaries that need to be included now with a life insurance illustration, from a compliance standpoint, you're going to have to list what the guaranteed and non-guaranteed premiums are in the future. So the client or the person looking at the product will be able to see both, here's the non-guaranteed number, here's the guaranteed number, and we'll be able to see the differential between the two.
We have a caller on Carphone, line number 4. Hi, welcome to the Afternoon Magazine.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Great.
Great.
Good.
Pay attention when you're on your car phone.
Hey, I'm okay.
Attaboy.
I'm doing fine. just cruising through beautiful Illinois and listening to your program. I have a real general question, and maybe you guys can shed some light on this. I have insurance through my employer, term life insurance, and I also have a standalone policy through a company you're familiar with, Northwestern Mutual. And what I'm trying to figure out is, obviously, my insurance with my employer is contingent upon my employment. And assuming that goes well, there's not a problem. But if it doesn't, then I'm really left with the insurance I have through Northwestern Mutual. As you advise your clients, do you have a recommendation if a person's in a position like that, what kind of mix they should maintain based on those circumstances?
Well, that's a good question. And certainly if your employer has, and if you're a young guy, how old are you?
30.
You're 30. You know, your group term insurance is a very, very reasonable premium. I mean, you're paying probably very, very little, if any, and they may be supporting it entirely. I would say this, though. Depending, again, on all of your other financial goals, oftentimes we recommend attaching a term policy to a permanent policy, and I'm assuming your Northwestern Mutual policy is some type of permanent policy, to guarantee insurability. And it's something that, you know, many people don't think about. They never think about losing their ability to get insurance. And as a 30-year-old, you shouldn't be thinking about that. You should be thinking similar to Craig, that you're going to be living a long, long time. But health factors can, you know, dramatically affect rates of insurance and even your ability to get insurance.
Right.
So having the ability to warehouse some term insurance and attaching a term policy to your existing Northwestern Mutual is also very, very reasonable from a cash flow standpoint, and you're insuring yourself against the risk of losing your insurability. And that's a very conservative approach to take with your life insurance. It's the one that I took for myself, and my father's going to add something.
Let me add this. I want you to picture and visualize a three-legged stool.
Okay.
Your whole financial security is sitting on that three-legged stool, and we've got three legs. We've got one that's a governmental leg. We've got one that's your company, your business leg, that your group insurance is through your company.
Right.
And they've got one that's your own personal leg. Well, we know the government leg is struggling. We don't, and the business leg you don't have any control over. So if you're going to build a foundation of your whole financial security, the one leg that you control, that you can really deal with effectively, is your personal one. So as Johnny said, that many times your group insurance is so inexpensive, and for a client to rely on that, say, well, I've got $500,000 with my company, phenomenal, I hardly pay anything. You can really be up the creek without a paddle, so to speak, if the company changes the plan, if you move, if you change jobs, all the things that...
333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Johnny, you talked a little bit about future insurability. I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about some of the factors that go into determining whether or not somebody is insurable.
Well, let me give you a couple that I've experienced oftentimes. You know, for example, if someone ever gets in the car and they've had too much alcohol,
mm-hmm.
And that's something you'd never want to do, but that happens. A DUI, most good life insurance companies will not insure you for 5 years. They won't, you know, no discussion. any type of mental illness. You know, someone has some stress, light depression, those can be major insurability factors. And again, we're not talking about necessarily cancer or some, you know, major disease. We're talking about things that can happen, you know, happen all the time or happening more and more that can dramatically affect insurability.
I think there is a bit of a misconception that age alone could determine insurability.
That's a great point. Definitely. Now, age does. I mean, age impacts term rates significantly. And once you pass age 40, in each year, as you get older, your risk of dying increases. But it, more importantly is health, your health factors, and you know, you'd be surprised the things that selective risk companies, and all the top companies are selective risk companies, look at when it comes to taking on a risk.
Craig, tobacco usage is another item that's very important, and we're starting to – the companies are really scrutinizing this. We used to be cigarette smokers only, but now we've moved to any use of tobacco is a rateable situation other than the occasional cigar smoker. So we're still giving a break on that, you know, celebration cigar. Ron Turner's had three of those so far this season, and we hope he has about 7 to 10 more, or 7 to 8 more. That's another item that sometimes people, you know, don't think about.
And in that case, let's take an example of someone who is a smoker, who has insurance, wants to get better rates with their insurance. If they quit smoking, how long do they have to quit in order to get those better rates?
They have to quit for 13 months.
Okay.
You cannot have one cigarette within 13 months. Then you have to pass a nicotine test. And then, you know, yes, you could start smoking, and hopefully you wouldn't. But once you're a select risk, Northwestern Mutual has 13 risk categories, and select is the number one. I guess, you know, you could take up smoking again, but you have to be nicotine-free for 13 months and then pass a nicotine exam.
Now, you mentioned earlier in the hour illustrations, and maybe we should explain what illustrations are. And John, you could probably talk about the difference in your business in the last 15 or 20 years in the transfer to computer illustrations, versus doing it by hand, and what has that meant for your business?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a question that's really changed the industry. 25, 30 years ago, companies could basically illustrate about whatever they wanted to. And we used in the Northwestern, we used a saying that often out-illustrated but never outperformed, because Northwestern had always based their illustrations on actual histories. Now, in the last, probably how many years, Johnny, 5 or 6 years, which the insurance industry has now made companies back their illustrations actuarially, and it's totally changed the industry. It's really caused the variable products, let alone what's happening in the stock market, but it's caused variable products to be, many companies are selling 50, 60, 70% of their line are variable products, which certainly would concern me from a suitability standpoint. But illustrations have changed dramatically. I think now your illustrations on the permanent products are much more accurate, and which is a good thing for the consumer.
And just to make sure listeners understand, an illustration basically is you're plugging in all the numbers, all of the variables, all these things, age and whether or not they're a smoker and whether or not what the medical history is, and using all of that information to determine what the value of the policy will ultimately be.
Exactly. Right. I have $500,000 of coverage, and I'm going to invest this premium, and in 10 years and 15 years and 20 years at 65, this is going to be my death protection, this is going to be my cash value, here's what I've put in, etc. And I think the typical consumer has a tendency to think that's what's going to happen. Well, that can change dramatically up or down.
Now, naturally, you guys are going to have high opinion of Northwestern Mutual because, you know, you work with their policies. But for someone who is starting out, what are some of the things that they should think about when they're trying to determine which life insurance company to deal with?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I would say first and foremost is to pick someone that you trust, that you respect, that you would want to be with your spouse if something happened to you. from a financial and insurance standpoint. So I would choose someone to work with first and foremost. I mean,
so would you think in terms of the agent before the company?
Now, granted, the agent has to represent a certain level of company, but
right.
So to say that the best agent representing a poor company can't work. Both things have to be there. But I'm just saying in priorities, I would select someone, you know, a CLU, CHFC, mm-hmm. someone that's a professional in the life insurance industry first. Then I would look very, very closely at company. And to look closely at company, there are several different rating services, third-party rating services that rank companies. AM Best, we go to the AM Best guide, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, Duff & Phelps, Weiss Research. These are five ratings areas that you can go to see how does my company measure up. And it's very important to look at those ratings very carefully, and not that they're trying to be deceptive, but oftentimes, you know, for example, a AAA rating or a AA rating or an A rating, A sounds good, that may be the third, fourth, or fifth best rating.
Right.
So it's very important to look at those very carefully. And then, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, at what level would you personally just cut it off and say, anybody below this level, don't even deal with?
Well, that's a good question. I deal with so few companies. Northwestern Mutual has been able to solve most of my problems, you know, in the insurance industry. But we do. At times, Northwestern Mutual is not interested in taking on certain risks. And we're very, very selective with the companies. I don't know if I could give you an actual rating that I would go below, but I think, you know, personally, there are probably only about 5 to 10 companies that I would work with on my life insurance planning. And so that's...
There's only, I believe there's only 3 companies that have the highest ratings mm-hmm. from all services. So, again, those ratings are very, very important. I mean, we just had a company that was a fine company 10 years ago, General American, mm-hmm. that just bellied up, so to speak. And mm-hmm. they were purchased by Metropolitan. But, again, those are things that happen. And the strength of your top-rated companies is phenomenal. But, again, and the consumer needs to be alert to that.
What are some of the factors that AM Best and others consider in determining those ratings?
That's a good question. They look at the company as a whole, first of all. They look at the cash and reserves. How much money does the company have? They look at the risks that they have. They look at the investment portfolio that the company has, meaning what's it made up of? How much real estate does their investment portfolio own? How many AAA bonds, AA bonds? How many stocks do they own? They look at the way the company handles their expenses. The three primary things, if you're really analyzing a life insurance company, that you want to look at, and the thing that makes up the proposal or the illustration that you're reviewing are mortality, mm-hmm. meaning what type of risks are the company taking each year? And there's usually they'll get a 5-year mortality rate. Second is expenses. How is the company paying their agents? How are they handling expenses? How much does it cost for them to put the insurance on the books? And then thirdly is their investments. What type of risk and what type of return is the company generating? You look at those three factors. And if you see company A represented very, very strongly in those three things, and then you look at their illustration, and you see company B representing less in those three areas with a stronger illustration than company A, something's amiss.
Mm-hmm.
Something is amiss. So it's very important to look at what makes up the illustration.
We only have about 5 minutes left or so, and so if you want to call in, time is running out. Call 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Might be able to get one or two calls on the air if you call right now. You mentioned some of the credentials that different agents have. Maybe explain what a CLU is.
It's a good question. But very few people know exactly what a CLU is. It is a designation that probably has not been marketed as well as a CFP, CPA. But a CLU is a chartered life underwriter. And what it means is that you have taken a series of 10 exams that have to do with insurance, risk, investments, taxation, estate planning. And those 10 exams are very, very extensive. And that you've passed all 10 of those exams. So it means that you've besides having your degree, becoming licensed to sell insurance, which takes an exam as well, you also have gone beyond that and taken some other courses. It's sort of the master's of the life insurance industry, so to say.
The CLU examination has more tax questions on it than the CPA exam has. So just as an interesting as a comparison.
And another one, Johnny, you're a chartered financial consultant, and that, I guess, does that move a little bit away from insurance and more towards investment?
Chartered financial consultant is a combination, is an ancillary designation for me, and you know, the lines delineating anymore insurance and money management and investments have become so blurred. I mean, my clients come to me for all different types of advice and counsel. I certainly have a counselor approach with my clients. So it's very important for me to be able to talk to them. And again, I refer my clients to attorneys when they need legal or documents drafted. I refer them to CPAs when they need specialized tax knowledge. I refer them to a stockbroker if they want to trade actively. However, having knowledge in those areas can provide value for our clients. And my mission statement is real simple. It's to provide value for our clients. So if we can do that, we feel like we're doing the kind of job we want to do.
You know, Craig, let me just throw in for our listeners, I think it's important that if the agent that you're working with doesn't have any of these degrees, and the $1 million roundtable is a production degree. It doesn't talk about knowledge, but it talks about success.
Yeah.
I think you would be certainly in line to ask your agent, you know, why? Are you working toward them, et cetera, because as long as there are some wonderful young people in this business that have just started and that are working on their CLU degrees, and as long as that, if I was a consumer and just asking, well, you know, are you working on your CLU, I'd want to hear that answer, yes, I am.
You mentioned MDRT, a $1 million roundtable, and you're a lifetime member. Explain what the organization is and how you get in and how you become a lifetime member.
Well, the $1 million roundtable is, it's like the all-American team of the insurance world. It's a worldwide organization. It's been around for a long, long time. It is strictly based on production, certain levels of production. It has about 55,000 members worldwide, and you attain membership in the $1 million Roundtable by hitting a certain amount of production. Now, for the first time, they're going to add certain amounts of brokerage business, of securities-related business, because the whole financial services industry, the insurance industry, the banks, the brokerage houses are all merging. So for the first time, the $1 million Roundtable will include brokerage business, group business, and the typical life insurance business. But it's a phenomenal organization, probably the finest sales organization in the world.
I'm afraid we're pretty much out of time. I want to thank you both for coming by. I appreciate
that. Thank you.
It was great talking with you, Craig.
My thanks to my guests, John W. Wright and John W. Wright II from John Wright & Associates Life Insurance Agency in Champaign.